Now, brought to you by Olive Tree Bible Software. Read, study, anywhere.
www.olivetree.com.
Coming to you live, but not really live, from Gut Check World Headquarters in the capital city of a boxing glove-shaped state and Gut Check South Command, deep in the belly button above the buckle of the Bible Belt, it's the Gut Check Podcast with your hosts, Ted Gluck and Zach Bartles.
Hey, welcome to the Gut Check Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, by my good friend and partner in business, Zachary Bartles. And Zach, we are back. We are back, early, I feel like.
Yeah, and by that we mean, like, what we always intended to actually do, which is weekly.
But we're back because there's been an outcry. I think it's safe to call it an outcry.
Straight up outcry.
It's straight up outcry in that people have demanded, quicker turnaround times between episodes. And we are nothing if not, servants of our public and servants of our loyal Gut Check Army members and our fan base. If you haven't done so already, go to gutcheckpress.com/army, and enroll in the Gut Check Army. You will
get
free stuff.
You may get relocated. That's a possibility.
You may get relocated, you may get asked to do some questionable things now and again, but, it will be worth it. It will all be worth your while. And, actually also hit us up on Twitter where we've been known to tweet, like once a month. So
at least.
So if you go to @GutCheckPod on Twitter, you might get to hear us tweet, around once a month, maybe even more. Although there's been some exciting activity on Twitter recently, Zach, with the advent of one at Jory Mikaka.
Is that you? Did you get on Twitter and that's how you did it?
Dude, no, I don't even know how, man. No, it's not me. It's truly not me. But it's very, very funny. I actually am still somewhat convinced that it's you.
It's not me, dude.
Yeah, it's not you. You're not just being coy about it.
It's not me. I don't even have time to like run my own social media, let alone and the churches and Gut Checks, let alone add another thing to the.
Well, somebody does have that kind of time. And to that person, I say thank you because you're doing good and funny work.
Yes. Very
Zach,
funny.
We have good and funny work of our own to do on this program because that is what we do on the program. And you know what? I was reflecting on something with you. In that like 15 to 20 minute period that we usually spend before the show, getting increasingly frustrated with technology and seeing our excitement for the program ebb away slowly during that time.
I call it the dwindling hour.
I call it the dwindling hour as well because that's funny. But, the thing that we were talking about today and the thing that we were lamenting was the fact that back in the day, man, and by that I mean even as recently as what, like 3 or 4 years ago, you could like, you would go to Best Buy and like buy a software package and it would come in like a nice box.
Glossy.
And there was like some, it was glossy. It was glossy. There was a little flap that
sometimes
opened up.
Sometimes a window to show you the CD within.
A window. Yeah. To show you that the CD was there. It was often like lashed up. You know how they sometimes put like, you know, those theft protection things. They would lash it onto the software and it was a really satisfying feeling because you felt like, you know, you would give them, you know, $100 or whatever and you would get back this very significant thing that you would then take home. You know, you would put the disc into your computer and then, voila, you have whatever it is. But now, you go online, you buy all the software online, you get like a 600 character download code.
License key. Yeah.
License key via email. And dude, it's just not the same. Talk about that, baby, because this is going to lead us into, a bigger topic about some home improvements that you made recently along these lines. So I want you to talk about that phenomenon.
I like tactile things. I like things you can feel. Mm. And I know you're with me as far as like books over ebooks.
Most definitely.
You can
Most
feel definitely. Them. You can touch them. You can yeah. write on, you own them even if, you know, yeah. there's no power. In yep. the same way, you know, computers, my computers are always continually dying. This, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and,
I do.
You know, if I've got that CD that I can just pop in the CD-ROM of the next computer, it's so much yeah. easier than going, hey, I need to re-download this. And they say, oh, well, that is no longer being supported. And so you have to buy right. the next version now and screw you. And now, you know, we're actually going to come and repossess your car to boot. I mean, like, it feels yeah. like you're just yeah. getting shafted every way when you try and upgrade. And so yeah. I love CD-ROMs. I love mm-hmm. them. I love mm-hmm. when, I loved them when they were the absolute cutting edge thing. And I was the first kid on my street to put a CD-ROM into my 386 computer. And I love them now.
Dude, what was the first CD-ROM you put into your 386? Like, you remember what it actually was?
I'll tell you two things. One, I got my dad for our computer in like 1990. Mm-hmm. I bought him the CD-ROM drive / sound card package because computers didn't have either.
So
the first CD-ROM I put into the drive was the one to load the drivers for the sound card. But after that, I was like, it has a CD player program? And you know what I put in, man?
What?
Newsboys, Not Ashamed.
Oh, dude.
Cranked
of
that
course.
Thing. Of course. Yeah.
Of course. Man, that's a nice memory. That's a really nice memory. And it played through those little, like, desktop, you know, PC speakers that you had
That's incorrect, sir.
Okay. What are we looking at?
My dad had, and this also would be a nice segue, built a huge, like, entertainment center on our family room wall, including
the
tube TV, and then there was the computer section.
Yeah.
And the stereo was all in there too, so I just plugged that sound card right into the stereo and the auxiliary, So we would play like, Stealth Bomber. And you'd have this, you know, I'd be like, oh, it's so real. The graphics are so real on this VGA monitor. And also the sound, it's on both sides of me.
Dude, now, let me just say this, man. Audio guys, it's a certain type of old guy. You know what I mean? It's a certain type of, like, old guy character type. The audio guy. I used to know this dude, man. And he was like you and your dad. And we're going to segue you into this, like, this is our home improvement episode. This is the arts and crafts episode of the Gut Check podcast. So we're going to talk about arts and crafts today exclusively. But before we do that, man, I knew a guy once and he was this kind of old guy. You know what I'm saying? He was like audio old guy. And he had built his own entertainment center. They have one of these old homes in East Lansing that had like a kind of an awesome attic.
Okay.
Like where you went up to sort of like a third floor.
Oh, that's the dream, dude. I want one of those.
Dude, yeah, it was so sweet. And he had it all decked out with like huge speakers. And his thing was, his favorite movie was Top Gun. So this old guy would put in the DVD of Top Gun and he'd position the speakers just so and get like all the little audio quirks worked out. And then he would crank it in that scene where they're like firing up the engines and it's like, doo, 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 shh, shh, shh. You know, in the opening strains of that. And he would always say the same thing. He'd go, dude, you can feel it in your chest, can't you? Like, feel your chest.
Feel my chest.
And I'd have to be like, you know, I can't feel it in my chest. That's a true statement because of how loud it is.
And apparently that's a very good thing.
Apparently that's a good thing. But yeah, the audio old guy, man, I sense that maybe you might be going down this road because
I'm too cheap for that, man. I'm too cheap for it. My father-in-law's audio old guy, and you got to sink a bunch of cashish into your like components and stuff.
Yeah, you really do, don't you? You got to get the like all the different pieces and constantly be tweaking and manipulating those things. But
we're kind of like you in that we have our TV, and I have a little stereo plugged into it where I can turn it up pretty loud, and I'm just kind of happy with. Just sitting in the family room watching a movie like that. I think my wife wants me to become audio old guy so that we'll have like surround sound, like a rumbler under the couch and stuff. And like,
dude, that's weird, man.
Yeah. Well,
that's just weird.
I agree. I think it would be cool, but I don't think it's worth pursuing and going to all the trouble.
I agree. It's not worth making that your persona. You know what I mean? Because you have other persona irons in the fire that are more cool, I think, and more significant at this point than being audio old guy. You know, I mean, we need to walk some of these other personas out and make sure we get the most out of them before either of us decide to become audio old guy. And the other thing about that is neither of us have huge houses. Like, it's not like I need this booming speaker system to like throw the audio, you know, around this gigantic cavernous room. And I know you're in the same position.
Right.
So
yeah. I'm like 6 feet from the thing anyway. So.
Yeah. I'm like 6 feet from the thing. I mean, if I can't hear it from here to there, like something's wrong with my ears, not the audio equipment. But Zach, speaking of audio equipment, and this is the inspiring thing. You texted me something this morning that was very inspiring to me, man. It's something that quite frankly, I've been thinking about all day. And you texted me that you had built a built-in shelving unit in your house to house all of your CDs. And this is a constant battle that I fight with my college students, man, because it makes me sad. They all have, you know, the entirety of their music collection stored on a phone.
Oh,
which to
I hate
me
that.
Is just the saddest thing imaginable, man. Yes. You're a CD guy. I'm a CD guy, though not to the degree that you are, man. I think you just have more CDs than me, but philosophically we're both CD guys. We're vinyl guys.
We're CD guys.
Yeah. We believe in owning the product. We are CD guys.
No, but see, like C-S-E-E-D-Y, like creepy guys.
No, I know.
Like...
I know. Yeah. I know what you're doing there. I know what you're doing there. So Zach, you have an extensive CD collection. I don't know that I know of any human being that owns more CDs than you do. And I'm guessing, and you can talk us through this, that it was difficult for you around the house to archive, and have all of those CDs in a usable fashion right at your fingertips. So being the problem solver that you are, being in close proximity to Hobby Lobby and Michaels, you probably went and got the equipment that you needed to build the perfect, built-in unit for these CDs. So talk us through that process, babe.
Well, here's the thing. Actually, you get lumber and that kind of thing these days. If you're lucky enough to live near a real lumber yard, you get them there. Or
yeah.
You go to Lowe's or Home Depot and get a bunch of crappy, warped stuff that's just not going to work very well, which is what I did in this case.
Yes.
But yeah. I had built – you've seen in my basement there, at one point I had wet carpet. It had gotten gross.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I wound up ripping it all out, ripping out part of the wall, and I covered it all over after I fixed the problem with a floor-to-ceiling kind of media shelf, CDs and DVDs.
Gotcha. Okay.
That was about 2008.
Okay.
Then, between 2008 and now, I acquired so many more CDs and DVDs that I needed to build the twin of that on the opposite side of my entertainment center.
Which is what
I did. So I had almost doubled the number of CDs I was dealing with during the 21st century.
Yes, yes. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, man. I have many questions in follow-up to that. So I'm going to try as best I can as a radio pro to guide us through this discussion. But there was some other stuff, some pretty significant stuff on the other side of your TV and stuff downstairs, right? So what did you do with like the drink dispenser and some of those other things? Was this a massive like, redecorate, move around kind of situation down in the basement?
Well, this is going to be a fascinating conversation for people who haven't, maybe I'll put a picture of my basement on for reference.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I actually built like a little platform into the shelf, built-in shelf for the 1980s pop machine.
Oh,
which is like my favorite kind of pop machine, the one with a little door that opens at the bottom that sort of like reminds you of a skating rink or
like when
your dad brought you to his office and everything smelled like
cigarettes.
Dude, it
reminds you of a place that really kind of had no business having a pop machine, but they had
like,
a pop
like
machine
a basement.
Anyway. Yeah, like a basement or like your dad's office, you know, like it's a place of business and it kind of wants to have a pop machine, but it doesn't want to commit to it. You know what I mean?
You know what? We're going to do this so that people can feel less like this is a place to kill themselves. Here's
exactly.
A little pop machine.
Yeah. It's okay, man. I can get a little Sprite, and I can get a little Diet Coke and life will be better.
Ted, I'm so glad you're still saying pop after a year in the South, man, that you're not like soda or Coke or one of these things.
Dude, it's funny. The South hasn't really changed me. Like I feel like I've acquired no Southern accent.
No, if you had, you would know because I would be mocking you relentlessly.
Yes, I know that. And I feel like it's weird, dude. In the Mid-South, you really don't get the heavy, heavy accent. Like there are people in our city that have it, but then there are equally as many, if not more people that have no accent at all. So I feel like we're just kind of we're in the middle. Whereas if we went down into Alabama, Mississippi, you know, some of those places, you would definitely, be looking at an accent situation. So, back to the built-in. So you crafted this CD built-in. How long did it take you man-hour wise to do this?
I would say including all the building, cleanup, painting.
Yeah.
I hate painting and I had to paint a whole thing because the other one was painted black. Probably 15 to 20 hours. It was a pretty elaborate job. During which I watched all the Die Hard movies and listened to two of their audio tracks, or commentary tracks.
Nice, baby.
Very fun
now,
stuff.
That is fun stuff, and that actually segues us into another topic, which is a long-term kind of running item of dialogue between the two of us as friends, as fathers, as business partners has been At what point do we show our kids Die Hard? Because every year, man, every year KK and I watch it around Christmas time. I usually watch it once or twice again throughout the year whenever I'm feeling it. And each and every time I've said to KK, like, is this the time I bring Tristan, my oldest son, into this thing?
It's such an important step, you know?
It's such an important step, dude. I feel like, you know, Paul and Ted Tripp haven't written about this in their parenting volumes, which, you know, I find to be a little curious. I mean, we call them parenting experts, but really how expert can you be in this space if you haven't addressed the all-important when to show Die Hard to your kids question? So that's a question I'm still looking to have answered, but
I thought that you had already answered it. You told me recently you mean the trip answer is what you have yet to hear.
I gave you the trip answer, but I also said that I think this Christmas is going to be the year that I show it to Tristan. Tristan's 14. He's watched a lot of other action movies with me, and I feel like now is the time for Die Hard. Plus he's really like chomping at the bit for it. Like he really wants to watch it because he's heard you and me talk about it for so long.
My kid quotes it day and night, and he's 8 and he hasn't seen it, but he knows the lines. He knows now I have a machine gun.
Yeah. So, okay. So this, I want you to set the scene for us. You're building your little CD, situation down in the basement. You're watching Die Hard. Your kid comes downstairs, and what do you do?
Well, here's the thing, man. I'm painting, right?
Okay.
I made an awesome drawer that kind of comes out from one of the shelves in which is the Nintendo Wii and all the controllers and everything.
Yeah,
so you just
yeah.
pull that thing out, grab a controller, and you can play, and then you just shove it all back in. So I'm
like
painting
it.
All these components.
Mm-hmm.
Calvin comes down during a really, like, low-key part. It's during some talking, like when Al's telling him, you know, that I love you.
I love you. The guys love you.
I've been talking to the guys off camera just to find out whether or not they love you.
They love you.
Turns out,
dude,
they
the other
love
day,
you.
Man, the other day, I was having a rough day at work, and I was texting KK, and I texted her something like, you know, I'm so glum, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which is a text that you've gotten from me before. And she texts back, and she goes, I love you. The guys love you.
So anyway, it's one of these parts. It's like Agent Johnson and Special Agent Johnson haven't quite gotten there.
Yeah.
And then they, and
no relation.
So my son comes down, and my wife's out of town camping.
Yeah.
So honestly, I'm a worse parent when my wife's daughter, when she's out of town.
Of course, man. We all are.
You know, like we literally went to Burger King at 9:50 on a school night.
Nice, dude. Your kid's living like a college kid, you know?
Yes. We all revert to that, whether you're 8 or 38 when
dude,
mom's
so
out of town.
True. It's like movies and junk food when mom's gone, man. You do. You revert back to like your sophomore year of whatever college you attended.
So anyway, he comes down to get his, what do you call, Baymax, right? Little, the funny creature from a movie. And he's like looking around. It's got all these pieces that go on it to make up its armor. And I'm like, Judas, man, I don't know where these all are. Just look, find it. I'm trying to paint all these pieces. I'm trying to get this done before your mom gets home. So he's looking around for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Finally amasses, I guess, all the pieces. And then I realized at one point, I'm like, Calvin's just sitting here watching this movie with me now, and he's probably been down here a good 20 minutes. And he saw Bill Clay.
Oh, Bill Clay, that's the best. He ought to be on TV with that accent.
And he knew the reference. So he goes, oh, okay, this is Bill Clay. And it dawned on me, I'm like, he's been watching this movie that really no 8-year-old ought to see. And like I remember you and I were like about ready to beat someone down for bringing like a 6 or 5 or 6 year old to the Expendables 2.
Oh yeah.
And B, it's about to get really bloody, because Shoot the Glass is coming.
Shoot the Glass comes up right after Bill Clay.
And
absolutely.
There's a dude whose legs just get shot to pieces.
Yes,
and it's Squib City.
I remember that scene.
So
yeah,
I go, Calvin, I know you're liking this, but we're going to switch to a different movie. And he was like, okay, let's watch Wreck-It Ralph. And I said, okay, let's watch. But unintentionally, my son is now probably seeing a good, 20% of Die Hard.
Nice, man. Well, I feel like it's a good 20% though. You know, that Bill Clay dialogue is a real pivotal point in the movie because, you know, Bruce Willis says it's better than being caught with your pants down. And then, and then there's all the dialogue about, the accent and how he ought to be on TV with that accent.
He ought to be on TV with that accent.
He ought to, is the thing.
Or in movies, holiday movies.
holiday movies. Oh, you're one of them. You're one of them. I love it, dude. So I will be showing Die Hard in its entirety to Tristan this Christmas, and I'll let you know how it goes, man.
Are you guys coming up here at all in the Christmas season?
Dude, I don't think so. Given that we were just up there to do the movie in October, I don't think we're planning a full, like, full-on trip up there. But actually, something that you mentioned in the last anecdote, you mentioned Baymax, and I don't know what that is because my kids aren't quite as young as your kid right now. But it reminded me of something that I wanted to ask you. Being that you are an archiver and sort of a collector of old technology, my question is this. Do you have a Betamax player?
I don't. I never got into that.
Okay.
Because by the time I was anywhere near old enough, that war had been won by VHS long
yes.
since.
I do remember
my old man, like, on the sly bringing home a VCR from work.
Oh, yeah.
Top loader. So that we could rent a video from the local, Showtime Video in Bay City and watch a movie. And I do remember then after we got our own VCR, he would bring that home as well and we would use it so that we could play the movie and then record it.
Nice.
And you know, some of those quaint memories, but no, Betamax is actually before me. And Ted, Baymax is from a movie called Big Hero 6, which you would actually dig. It's hilarious.
Dude, I have seen it and I do dig it.
Okay, Baymax is a big white puffy guy.
Oh, the white puffy guy. Yeah, absolutely. I just whiffed on the name. But yeah, Bayman, that was a great movie. That was a really great movie. But
unexpectedly good.
Unexpectedly good, exactly. The reason I asked about the Betamax is, one of the few kind of treasures that I was able to still unearth at the Silverdome when you guys were down for the shooting was, I found some old game tape, some old Detroit Lions game tape.
Oh.
Which for me as a football nerd is just like a treasure trove, man. It's heaven, but they're all on beta. So they're all like these beta tapes.
Did you look on eBay?
I did look on eBay, man. It was a little more expensive than I had hoped.
What are you looking at? $200 or so or what?
Yeah, you're looking at a couple $100.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, probably the real sweet spot for those was about, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago when, like nobody was using them, but they hadn't become like vintage and hipster and cool yet. So
I bet what you can do, man, find a little local. There's still one undoubtedly in like the Memphis area, if not in Jackson. Find a local video rental place that also does the like conversion of old movies to DVD.
Guarantee
they would put it all on DVD for you and then it's much easier. And you'd have the Betamax tapes as the memento.
I'd have to watch them on the memento.
Yeah,
absolutely. No, that's a good idea, man. That's a good idea. So back to this Die Hard issue, baby. Now that we've sussed out when to show our kids Die Hard, you asked me this morning, during our production meeting to rank.
I remember the intern wasn't in the room yet, but we had gotten our second cup of coffee. Yeah.
And by that, I mean the four texts that we exchanged this morning. You'd asked me to rank, the five Die Hard movies.
Yeah.
In order of magnificence, 1 to 5. And here's my problem, man. I'm going to try to do that. But I only actually have distinct memories of 3 of them.
Okay. Wow.
I know, man. I know. This is going to be disappointing for you, but you can, in giving your ranking, you can help me. But obviously for me, number one, the greatest action movie of all time is the original Die Hard.
Come out to the coast. We'll have a few laughs.
Come out to the coast. Have a few laughs. Yeah.
We'll get together. So, have a few laughs. I don't want to misquote it and then have somebody tweet us on it.
Oh, yeah. As someone inevitably will because that's what they do. So at the top of the list, obviously, is Die Hard 1.
Glass?
Glass.
I'm sorry. I got to let you go. I want to just keep interrupting with lines, but I'll let you get the number 2.
Please keep interrupting me with lines, actually. That's the funnest thing.
Give me
one more.
What I'm going to give instead is the text that I got from you. Oh, never mind. I turned my friggin' phone off. Can you find the text that you sent me the other day about the line of that Ellis?
So here's the thing, man. So let me tell you the story about that. So, okay. In the first Die Hard, if you've seen the film, one of the many storylines that makes this the greatest action movie of all time is that Harry Ellis, who's this cokehead who works in the Nakatomi Corporation, he's high up in the company. But the deal with Harry Ellis is, Harry Ellis is always trying to seduce, John McClane's wife. So Ellis is forever like inviting her over and trying to seduce her. So it's Christmas time and Ellis goes to, McLean's wife and he says, you know, why don't you come over tonight? We've got a nice baked brie, a crackling fire and some mulled wine, right? And, at the time when I was thinking about this and texting you, KK and I were baking a brie of our own and it made me think of that line that Ellis always uses. And I said to my wife, I said, you know, I have to be honest, every time Ellis tries to seduce John McClane's wife with that line, like that would always work on me.
If you were Holly Gennaro, that what you would have
if
been.
If I was Holly Gennaro, I would have been there, man. I would have been two shakes.
Dude, you know how 80s fabulous that dude's apartment would have been?
Oh, dude, I desperately want to see his apartment.
Lighting.
If we have any listeners who are artists or interior designers and you want to take a crack at sketching out Harry Ellis's 1980s apartment, which then what I'll do with that sketch is I'll hang on to it for about another 20 years until I get rich and then I'll design it to spec and live in it.
And you can come over for the housewarming.
And you can come over and have some mulled wine and some baked brie in front of a crackling fire, right? So I just said to my lady, I simply said, I would be very susceptible to Ellis's charms because to me, a baked brie and mulled wine sounds much nicer than like a crowded, loud, like Christmas party at a company.
Yeah, you don't want to get out of there that minute. I mean, you hate those gatherings.
Yeah, dude, I hate those gatherings. I hate stuff like that, contrived, like corporate BS gatherings like that. So I'd be out in two shakes, man, having that baked brie at Ellis's house.
Do you think was baked brie though, or do you think there's just more nose candy and a really clumsy attempt to get her into bed?
I feel like in the 80s, baked brie was sort of euphemistic for coke. You know what I mean? Like in certain neighborhoods, you just said, like, you would like pull up to the wrong street corner and roll down the window of like your Oldsmobile, Grand Marquis and say, I would like some baked brie. And like the guy knew what you were talking about. You know what
cop?
I mean?
My guy wants some baked brie.
Yeah, I just want some baked brie. Wink, hey, wink,
Ted,
nudge, nudge. You
Ted,
know?
So the baked brie sounds good to you?
The baked brie sounds good to me.
Hey, so, miss some.
Yeah, miss some. Exactly. So as I was thinking about this, I texted it to you and it occurred to me how random that was.
It was great though. It made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, just for you to receive this text about that. That's the thing though. I feel like whenever I have an insight on the movie Die Hard, I need to share it with you because, to not do so would be just somehow wrong and it would dishonor the relationship. So
Ted, speaking of our relationship and also in the tradition of like being four layers deep and interrupting ourselves.
Yeah.
I have to just confess to you, I pulled a Ted. I'm drinking the Amp Strawberry Limeade right now.
Dude, you are. I'm glad you are, because I'm thirsty.
Open
you
it up,
I'm
man.
Let's put a pin in this Die Hard conversation.
Okay.
And I'm going to open up my Amp Strawberry Limeade.
Which I bought. I bought two for us at the really sad gas station kitty corner from the Silver Dome when we were together.
Uh-huh.
And then I forgot mine at home, and I went to three different stores before I found this swill.
So this is the sound of Amp Energy Strawberry Limeade flavor being opened in my studio. Wow. Dude, you know what jumps out at me immediately on this, Zach?
Hmm.
Is the color. Like a little bit splashed up on the top of the can.
Very
as
pink.
I opened.
Yeah.
It's very, very pink, man. And some of these energy drinks, like you expect that. You expect the vivid, vibrant color, but
then they're a gray green, yellow.
Yeah, then they're like a gray green or they're just clear or whatever. But this thing, man, this thing delivers. That's pink. Now, Zach, anything for you, from a coffee standpoint on this can?
I haven't yet read it. New flavor, it says. Yeah, that's a big mistake. There's no copy really, is there?
No, it's very minimalist. And in fact, like, stay with me here, okay? There's something manifestly sad about the images of fruit that's on this can.
Yeah, it's trying to look space age. This is space age strawberries.
It's space age strawberries and limeade, but what it looks instead like is like 1980s cartoon strawberry.
You're
you know
right.
What I mean?
Yeah, this is the back. If you saw the front, you'd have a face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the front of the strawberry would have a face and it'd be a sad 80s cartoon strawberry.
And it would be like a cartoon that would last like four episodes, a placeholder between, like Captain Between, and like, the Game Master and the Hulk yeah, and Hogan.
He-Man.
Yeah.
He-Man and like He-Man. The Hulk Hogan cartoon. Yeah.
Dude, you know what it tastes like to me? Have you tried it?
Yes, I have tried it, and I would like to hear what it tastes like to you, and then I have some thoughts as well.
My least favorite kind of Jolly Rancher, the watermelon Jolly Rancher, turned into a liquid. There's no lime aspect to it whatsoever in the flavor profile. It just tastes like fake, like candy watermelon, which to me may as well just be garbage.
I think turned into a liquid is giving it too much credit in this case, because what you mean is that candy that you just described, but just melted. You know what I mean? Like turned into a liquid suggests some kind of like curing process that's really too much, too
alchemy,
much credit.
Maybe or
alchemy. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. No, this is some bad stuff. You know what it actually tastes like to me?
What's that?
It tastes like the feeling of, you know, sometimes around the holidays, you just eat too much sugar. Like you go to an old person's house and they have candy out and you just eat a bunch of it because you're nervous and
there's
you don't
like
know
dust
what to say.
On it, but you eat it
there's
anyway.
There's dust on it, but you eat it anyway. And then you get that feeling in your mouth of like, oh, I've really had too many sweets. I've
like,
had too
like,
much
like
candy.
You almost feel like your tongue has cavities.
You feel like your tongue has cavities, like it's getting cancerous. It's just like nasty, you know?
Yeah, you want to brush your teeth in your whole mouth and like
you do.
Lose just Listerine and just start over. Yeah. Yeah,
you
want
to start over,
right.
Man.
It does taste like that feeling.
It tastes like that. But just after like two swallows of it. You
I'm
know
drinking
what I mean?
All this can though, dude. That's a fact.
Are you really? What do you got going tonight? You got a long night ahead? Or,
No,
or
I'm just
what?
Thirsty and it isn't quite bad enough to keep me from downing the whole thing.
Dude, listen to what I'm doing tonight. I'm judging a Halloween costume competition on campus late tonight.
For the students, huh?
The students, yeah. It's called Costume Coffee House, and it's a big annual event that I actually, fun fact, I agreed to be a judge for it last year, but then I forgot, and I just went to hang out with some friends.
they came crawling back to you.
They did. They were down one judge last year, sadly. So Union Brass, if you're listening, I apologize for that, but I will be there this year.
It's a Southern Baptist school, right?
Correct.
So I'm hoping to hear that like the young ladies will not be in like slutty versions of everything, right?
I
like,
hope not.
I'm
man.
A slutty I, minion. I'm a slutty, you know, dinosaur.
I don't think we're looking at a slutty minion kind of event tonight, but
good. That's so trashy to me. It's so
I'm
trashy.
I'm expecting, dude, given our student body, I'm expecting lots of like clever, lots of topical, yeah.
A lot of Trump?
I don't know. Yeah, a lot of Trump.
I almost went Trump myself. I rarely actually dress up. I always want to, and then I'm like, ah, that's kind of creepy. I saw a Trump mask and wig, and I was like, oh.
The irony involved. Dude, let me ask you this, man. Since we're on this topic ever so briefly, what's the best Halloween costume you've ever had? Like, as an adult. I'm not talking about as a kid, as an adult.
I think the best I ever had was, it was like these prosthetic faces, little faces.
Okay.
And I bought them at like Party City or something when I was like 22, and you use spirit gum and stuff to put them on your cheeks.
Okay.
So there were like a bunch of faces on my face, and I had
that's gross.
Yeah, but it was hilarious. They were all making weird expressions, and I like Aaron helped me with the makeup, and it looked just seamless. It looked real, like I actually had. Faces
on your face.
Now I imagine that for you, this is an invalid question because you don't seem like the kind of guy who would ever dress up for Halloween.
Dude, no, you know what? It's weird, man. There were a number of years, and I don't know if it was just our social circle, like early in the Lansing, Michigan years, but I feel like between ages like 22 and almost 30, we dressed up almost every year, man, because we were always invited to like
parties.
Halloween party, man.
I heard about this on the Happy Rant.
Yeah, so one year we went as, you remember like Michael Flatley, Lord of the Dance?
Yeah.
We went as that one year. That was funny. One year we went as Bono and the Edge from U2. She was Bono and I was the Edge.
Yeah, I was gonna guess that.
Yeah, meaning that like I just had an acoustic guitar and I could play like, two chords of every U2 song and I had a t-shirt that said, Kiss Me, I'm Irish. That was the costume.
Half of U2's catalog is just playing two chords, but with one of those delay things that makes it sound like your fingers
exactly.
are going 1,000 miles an hour picking.
Right. Dude, how do you feel about U2?
I think they're the most overrated thing in the world.
And dude, so I could not agree more, man. I could not agree more. Yeah, I hate you two.
I don't hate them. I nothing them.
Oh, interesting.
I like Beautiful Day because it reminds me of a particular time in my life. I like With or Without You if it comes on, or Sunday Bloody Sunday or something, but like I never crave them, and not one of those however many hundreds or thousands of CDs is a U2 CD.
Yeah, interesting, man. I don't think I have a U2 CD either. I like the one song where the streets have no name. I like that one too.
Yeah. I mean, they're good. They're like REM or somebody. I mean, they've been raised up to like this mythical status when I feel like they're no better than like Toto or, you know, bands that have been kind of forgotten and didn't have that many radio hits, but were pretty good. Like U2 shouldn't have had that many radio hits.
I agree, man. I totally agree. Now, you know who loved some REM back in the day?
Who's that?
KK.
Yeah, I did too. Stand in the Place Where You Live, man. That was one of my favorite rock songs in the, when I was in elementary school. I love Losing My Religion. Mm-hmm. I love, Good Grief, that one they did, the Andy Kaufman one. Yeah,
oh,
they're
I like
great.
That one,
you like them? What do you feel, how do you feel about REM?
Dude, you know, like, I was never as enthusiastic about them as KK was, and I think it always frustrated her. And I think she always like, She always felt that I was like not artistically on her level because I didn't like REM.
That seems like an invalid conclusion to make from that fact though.
Dude, it is an invalid conclusion, but when you're 21 and insufferable because it's the 90s and you're also in college, right. It's a completely valid conclusion.
She was like, you're such a jock. I still have work to do on you, Ted.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. to de-jock you completely, you know. Until you like this little weaselly band called REM, you're still a jock in my mind. Oh man. Baby, where even were we? We were talking about
You told me that Die Hard was the best movie of all time, and then you were about to tell me the second one and I interrupted you. This was like 45 minutes ago. So number two.
Yeah, dude,
go.
That's right. All right. Number two, we're ranking the Die Hards. I'm putting this one at number two because of two reasons. It's Die Hard 2, Die Harder.
Oh my gosh.
And the reason is, number one, they shot it in Alpena, which I think is pretty cool. Uh-huh. That's a little town in northern Michigan. They shot it at the old Alpena Airport, which is pretty money.
I was just there about 3 weeks ago, actually.
No kidding, baby. What for?
Alpena Book Festival. Alpena Book Festival.
Oh, nice. Nice. Very nice. Wow.
Beautiful
which is
town.
As
just beautiful.
Every bit as glamorous as it sounds, I'm sure. So, because it's shot in Alpena, and also because I thought this was just a very sinister twist. The bad guy in the movie, you're supposed to be scared of him because he does naked Tai Chi for an uncomfortably long time right at the beginning of Die Hard 2.
It's like this weird lighting, and you're like, that's a butt, right?
Yeah, that's a butt. That's like an early 90s butt, though. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's an early 90s.
You had to have the butt in the movie,
Yeah, it's an early 90s butt. It's a weird lighting early 90s butt in which, like, it's not at all erotic, but you're just, like, aware that it's there.
It's just
uncomfortable.
What I mean? Yeah.
It's uncomfortable.
Now,
exactly.
You realize that bad guy is the Grim Reaper from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
That's crazy. I didn't put that together. I had not put that together. So.
All right, so one and then two, and then number three?
One and then two, and then number three is the only other Die Hard movie that I remember anything about it. So I'm putting it there, but I'm going to need help because I don't remember which one it is. It's the one where, like, they're in Russia and he has a son and they're, like, sliding through those, like, trash tube things together.
Yeah, that one is It's a Good Day to Die Hard. It's the fifth movie. Just recently came out.
So, okay. So that one honestly is probably my number two. I feel like it's a better movie than Die Hard 2. So maybe that one's in the two spot.
That's the one where they get out the special spray that they can spray on themselves so that they won't be affected by all the fallout at Chernobyl and they can take off their fallout suits. Give me a spritz of this.
I'm sure that spritz really exists, man, and I'm sure it's an amazing product. Actually, I think we've drank an energy drink that promises similar things, but probably fails to deliver. But those are my three Die Hard movies, baby.
Wow.
I feel fairly confident that I've seen the other two, but I just have no memory of them.
All right, let me help you here. Because I feel like you need a little help here. I really do.
I do need help here. Baby,
now,
I'm admitting that I need help.
What I like is that you recognize what I recognize, which is that the other movies may have Die Hard in the title, but they're not. You know, they're not even close. They're quantitatively different because they're a different number, but they're quantifiably different because they're a different thing.
Yes.
But here's why this came to my mind. I watched Die Hard 4, which is Live Free or Die Hard.
Yep.
Which was, I saw that on opening day in what's the big like open air market thing that used to be a train station in Washington D.C.? Not open air market, but market.
Yeah.
Grand Central Station type thing.
There you go.
In Washington D.C., gorgeous place, and the whole movie pretty much takes place in Washington D.C. So we're looking at the Washington Monument. We walk right in, and then boom, John McClane is fighting bad guys right where we are. It was cool.
Yeah.
But I watched it again. Mostly, this is how I got going on the Diehards, because I had gotten through with all of the seasons, the second watching of all the seasons of Justified, and I wanted some more awesome Timothy Olyphant movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the bad guy on Die Hard 4. He's a computer hacker. And the good guy is Justin Long, the secondary good guy.
Yes, that's right.
The Mac guy, who I love.
Yes. Yeah.
So you remember this movie? You've seen this one?
Yeah, I think I've seen it. I remember just these very few things about it, but,
loved it. Let me tell you why I loved it.
Okay.
First of all, I love the cast. It's great. Secondly, sure. I loved the era.
Yeah.
The bad guy's a computer hacker, even though he's all ripped and he, you know, he's into guns and fighting and he's invincible.
Yeah.
And the good guy's a computer hacker. And you know what they're using nonstop in their hacking?
What's that?
Palm Pilots.
Oh man.
PDAs, little roll up,
Dude, see, that's right in your
keyboards.
Sweet spot, man. Yeah, right in your sweet spot. That's your era of technology to a T.
And it was like, there was no such thing as a smartphone. So John McClane's like, give me this guy's PDA. And he takes it and opens it, slides it open. And I'm like, that's a phone. But because back then, a phone was something that you used to communicate with your voice to someone that was in a different locale.
Which is crazy to think about.
So if you had a device that happened to do that, but mainly it was a computer, you called it a PDA, and like I had, you know, a similar PDA, and I felt really, you know, like a camaraderie with the cast of this movie.
Of course, man, of course.
And it was just so awesome. The other thing I loved about it is it was part of this double trend, and it was really kind of trailblazer in both.
Uh-huh.
One, coming back with a sequel to what seemed like a completed trilogy. Coming back years and years later to add a sequel to something that seemed done, which, I mean, you also had, Indiana Jones did that. Most people don't think that went well, but I thought it went all right. Rambo came in with another one. Rocky came in with another one. It wasn't a trilogy that was done, but you know, they came in out of nowhere with these things. And I feel like Die Hard kind of led the way with that.
Interesting.
And Die Hard came back, with a thing that ignored 2 and 3 entirely. So it was like a direct sequel to the first one, which like, lately.
It's standalone. Like, it's its own thing.
Well, it's a sequel, but it doesn't, you could have seen it without seeing any of them. But if you saw the first one and then saw this one.
Yep.
It almost seemed like that's how it was intended to be watched.
Right. Right.
And like, I remember, I think the first movie that did that was like the Halloween that had Jamie Lee Curtis again. And they ignored everything in between. And it was just like, oh, you know, you feel like you have this big bloated kind of corpus. Yeah. And then you just strip it down and say, let's make another sequel.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a sequel to the first movie. So it was, I don't know, it was great. And it made me, excited about Die Hard. And then immediately after that's when I started watching the first movie.
Nice. Nice, baby.
So here's my ranking.
Okay.
And you will see how different we are in this regard.
Wow. This is fascinating. Fascinating insight into the company. Yeah.
It is. This is the kind of thing that people really pay to hear when they're.
This is what people tune in for when they tune in.
Number one, Die Hard, obviously.
Obviously.
Number two, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Okay.
This is the third movie where he runs around the city with Samuel L. Jackson.
Now, I have seen that one, but he has to solve puzzles. Impression on me.
Really?
Okay,
now,
the
bad guy in this one is Jeremy Irons playing the brother of Hans Gruber. And he makes it out like he's supposed to be like this terrorist with a bone to pick with America, and really he's just an exceptional thief. And he's stealing gold.
I'm an exceptional thief.
That movie, what I love about it is they keep with the theme of the musical score being, you know, the first one is Ode to Joy. It's the kids call it The Ants Go Marching One by One. It's a classical piece. What is that called?
Yeah, I don't know.
At any rate, that's the song. So it's got like that plays throughout and variations on it. It seems very diehardy, and man, Samuel Jackson had not yet become a self-parody.
Yes.
He was so cool in that movie.
Nice,
he's amazing.
Man.
His name was Zeus.
Of course.
Zeus.
Yeah.
And yeah. McLean thought he was Jesus because someone said Jesus, and he's like, "That's not my name. I'm Zeus." Shove a lightning bolt, your crevices. And right. I love that movie. I think it's much better than Die Hard 2, which we watched together and all laughed at just nonstop.
Yeah. Die Hard 2 is a bad movie.
Yeah, the editing's awful.
Mm-hmm. It's a terrible movie for sure.
It's about, you know, like it is to movies what like the Alpina Book Festival was to like the one in Frankfurt, Germany. I mean, it just seemed like it was
exactly.
on a much lower.
Exactly.
And then, my third one is definitely, Live Free or Die Hard.
Okay.
With, you know, the computer hacking. So other than the first movie, we don't have any of the same movies.
Oh, that's fascinating.
To me, the fifth one that you referenced was a decent action movie, but had nothing to do with Die Hard because it didn't have that element of one lone cop in the wrong place at the wrong time, kind of fine, I'll save the day because there's no one else to do it and I'll make the jokes. It never happened.
Interesting, man. Interesting.
My assumption is that someone came up with Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Russia, which was great.
Yeah.
Threw it on a poster and then they wrote it around that.
Yeah, you know what? That's probably actually like pretty accurate. That sounds like the way that would come about, for sure.
Let me bounce something off you, though, a minute, because this was my thought when I'm watching it. I love Timothy Oliphant, great bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're trying to return to the ethos of the original movie, you're going to have the bad guy be a computer hacker who can, you know, do things that no one else can do that are nearly miraculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and can be kind of an engaging character and colorful and exciting and say things like the quarterback is toast.
Yeah.
You know, who would you bring into the mix as the character?
Who would you? So let me get yours and then I'll think about mine while you're talking.
Dude, I'd bring back Theo.
Theo.
Theo didn't die, did he?
No, Theo just got punched.
He got punched.
He got punched by Argyle.
He's the only survivor of the Nakatomi heist, so he would have gone to prison for a long time.
He's the only survivor of the whole Nakatomi incident. This is brilliant. Dude, we need to at least bare minimum write a piece of fan fiction that involves Theo in which, you know, you and I as journalists track down Theo and interview him on recollections of, his recollections of the Nakatomi incident.
I like that.
This is fascinating.
A dual interview piece with his perspective and Argyle's.
His perspective and Argyle's. You know what? We'll bring him back into the same room.
Argyle was just kicking it, you know, listening to a little Run DMC.
Lo, these many years later, you know, Argyle now owns his own limousine company, I'm sure, in Los Angeles. Theo probably just went to jail, I'm guessing. Now, what would your sentence look like if you were Theo?
He didn't kill anybody.
He did kill. Did
Who?
He?
No, he gave help. He aided and abetted. He said, you know, not a creature is stirring except the four guys in standard 2x2 cover formation.
Yeah.
So like he gave them the information to kill people and he sat by idly while Tagagi was killed, but he didn't pull the trigger on anybody.
I thought that as they were entering the building for the first time and there was that security guard sitting behind the desk watching the game, And Theo loved the sports narratives, man. He loved sports metaphors because as they were on their way in, he was reenacting a scene from the Showtime Lakers that ended with this security guard, this gentleman being shot. And I thought it was Theo that pulled the trigger, but I could be wrong.
It wasn't. It's the guy who masquerades later as the security guard himself.
Ah, yes, you're right.
But really there's an absolute cavalier attitude toward murder on Theo's part.
Theo's
helping.
His perspective, his philosophy on human life is just, appalling.
How did they not use him as the bad guy for that movie?
I have no idea, man. I have no idea. Whatever happened to Theo as an actor? Do you have in your studio?
Sad. I don't have to look it up.
The capability? Okay.
I can tell you.
You have looked it up. Tell me.
I haven't even looked it up. Here's what happened. Uh-huh. And maybe you should look it up to confirm. Yeah. I believe this is the same gentleman who was like Matlock's like investigator on Matlock for many years.
Okay.
Was then like the sidekick on Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh no.
With Chuck Norris.
No. Yeah.
And finally played the pastor who got left behind on the Kirk Cameron version of Left Behind.
Oh, Theo, how the mighty have fallen.
How big of a deal would it have been then for him to score another Die Hard movie?
Dude, it would have been huge. It would have been a life changer for him. And I wish we'd had this conversation a year ago. I would have gotten Theo involved in my motion picture, Silverdome, for selfish reasons, I would have just wanted to meet Theo.
Just so we could hang out with Theo.
Dude,
can
just
you
so
imagine
we could hang
that?
Out. Dude, can you imagine sitting in that little trailer on the set with Theo?
Holy crap, yes.
Oh, dude. Dude, it's Christmas, Theo. This season of Miracles.
Listen, buddy, we know that you're a serious performer, et cetera. You've had a career, but all we want to talk about is Die Hard.
Is Die Hard. Yeah. In fact, I don't even want you to do your scenes. We'll put it off. I want you to just sit here and tell me Die Hard stories all the live long day, man. That would have been amazing, dude. Amazing. Well, maybe for the next movie. We can engage the services of one Theo, but how amazing would it be though, if we're a piece of fan fiction or just in real life to get Theo and Argyle back in a room and just let them chop it up. So what do you figure? Theo got, I don't know, 20, 30 years in prison for his, involvement in the Nakatomi incident.
Meaning he'd be out now.
He would be out now. He'd be a different man. I mean, the years would not have been kind.
Would he still have that sardonic kind of wit, you know?
Would he have the sardonic wit? Would he have the sort of Cosby sweater, kind of aesthetic going on, or?
Would he have kept up to date on technology, or would he be stuck in the 80s, which would be an awesome twist?
Dude, Theo would get out and he'd be like, hey, I'm ready to do some hacking, you know? Somebody get me a little, mainframe to hack into here.
Oh my gosh. Dude,
this is amazing. This thing is writing itself. We need to do this as soon as we hang out. Yeah.
Two possibilities. One, it's just a funny little piece for the Gut Check Army.
Yeah.
Two, it works itself into Re-Raptured again.
Yes, it does. I think it absolutely does. I think these two gentlemen are going to be pivotal, you know, kind of plot movers for Re-Raptured again.
Can we get sued for that?
Probably. although I want to say yes.
We'll just change your names a little bit.
Leo and
Garbile.
Scargyle. I don't know.
Gargamel.
Argyle Amel. Dude, can you, do you have the capability in your studio to look up, Argyle? And see what he's done in the past 30 years?
That I don't know at all. Let me bring up my, computerized computer and get onto the interweb. Hold on, I have to log into the interweb.
Dude, you have to hack in, man. You have to hack into your own.
And by hack in, I mean open Chrome.
You do a little Theo.
Yeah. There was a while where I was a holdout Internet Explorer guy just because it was absolutely the thing not to do.
You're contrarian in that way.
You know what it is? It's elitism.
It is.
I love technology when few people have it, and I am one of them.
Yeah.
Once it becomes kind of populist, everybody's got it, you know, Democratic, the bar is, then I'm like, well, I hate this. Why is everyone staring at these phones all the time? I liked it when I was staring at my Palm Pilot and everyone else was like, what's that?
Dude, but now you're a phone guy yourself. Man.
Yeah, I'm kind of over that.
I'm
not gonna get rid of it and go back to the flip phone, I don't think, but
Dude, there is Devereaux White, Argyle.
That's a cool name, Devereaux White.
Dude, he still looks good, man.
Dude, he looks like someone I would absolutely want to be friends with. He was on Blues Brothers.
What?
Young Guitar Thief.
That's like my second favorite. Oh, he was the little kid guitar thief, dude. He was literally like 9 years old in the Blues Brothers.
That's spectacular.
That's so awesome, dude. So he is freaking awesome.
Not really work. He was on Workaholics. It's a funny show that I have only seen a couple episodes of. Hasn't been doing much lately, it doesn't look.
Dude, we could have gotten him for Silverdome. Ah.
Yeah, there's very little in his bio. I don't think.
I know. I just clicked on his bio. Like, I want to know everything about Devereaux White now.
I'm glad we didn't click on it and find that, you know, he's dead or something. That would have been the worst.
I know. That would have been a real downer, wouldn't it have? Let's look just for grins, man. I want to see Harb Bochner. Harry Ellis. I just want to give a little look at the resume of one Harb Bochner. Now, this is a gentleman who's been working a lot in Hollywood.
I saw him in a movie or in a television show about 3 weeks ago, man.
Okay.
And he played a very similar character to Ellis. It was on Leverage, which is an awesome show on Netflix.
Guy's been working like crazy, man.
I remember he did like a Hemingway adaptation and stuff. He's huge. But he played a owner of a vineyard who was like all about the money and like screwing people over and stiffing people, and I was like, this is just Ellis again. I love it.
Dude, I'm looking at this guy's pictures. No beard. I swear to gosh, man. I'm you know me, man. I'm 110% heterosexual. But this is a good-looking dude. Harb Bochner.
Dude, Harb of course Bochner, he is. This is Ellis.
Dude, this guy though, I'm all kidding aside, man. the chin, the jaw. This guy is conventionally handsome. Like if somebody gave you a sketch pad and said, Zachary, draw me a conventionally handsome man. The most handsome man you can, you would draw this.
Nah.
You would draw some version of Hart Bochner. You would.
I tell you what, I think that if you gave me, I'm looking at this headshot now, if you gave me a sketch pad and said, try to draw Terry Silver from Karate Kid 3, I might accidentally draw Hart Bochner.
Hart Bochner. Dude, Terry Silver only wishes he was Hart Bochner. You know what I'm saying? Hart Bochner is, he's the guy, man. He's the guy behind the guy. Now, if you're Hart Bochner, now far be it for me to put words in his mouth and try to know what he's feeling at any given time, but I feel like it's just randomness and chance that that guy didn't become like a superstar Hollywood leading man.
Well, he should have been the 80s biggest star.
That's what I'm
absolutely
saying. Should have been, dude, Kevin Costner? How is Kevin Costner Kevin Costner? How come Hart Bochner isn't Kevin Costner?
That is a question that will never be answered.
It won't Not ever be answered. And I don't like that about the question. You know what I'm saying? I dislike the question because of that. Like, yeah, I don't want to live in a world where Hart Bochner isn't Kevin Costner. You know?
did he have a mullet? He didn't even have a mullet. Did he was ahead of his time?
No, dude, he was just a good looking dude all the way through. Like every era, he was like the good looking dude of that era.
Let me tell you what though, our wives did not think that Ellis was in any way attractive. One of them made a big deal about his linoleum colored teeth.
That was my wife. That sounds like something she would say.
On the podcast, last year on the Christmas, or two years ago on the Christmas episode, and I really don't understand how they consider themselves. I mean, they had good enough taste to marry us, but.
As a complementarian, man, I'm going to have to just talk to her about this because I can't have that kind of disunity in my household vis-a-vis Hart Bochner. I can't let the sun go down on disagreement like that. You know what I mean?
Actually, oddly, Ted Tripp did write a book about that. So.
he wrote a book called Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Your Anger Vis-a-vis Hart Bochner.
Now, if Hart himself called you and said, you want to come on over for, you know, some mulled wine and a roaring fire and aged brie, would you be on the next flight?
I'd be there.
All right.
I'd be there.
That's good to know.
I'd be there. I might check his IMDb or check the internet to see if he's gay or not, but I don't know how heavily that would influence whether or not I went, actually.
Right, I think you're actually only 109% heterosexual.
I might only be 109%, man. Hart Bochner. Our boy, man, Hart Bochner. We're huge fans. If you're listening, join the Gut Check Army. Follow us on Twitter. Dude, how money would it be if Hart Bochner was a fan of the program? I'm just saying.
What if he endorsed one of our books?
Oh, dude, that'd be ridiculous. What if we got him to write the foreword for every book we ever do from this point forward?
Well, you know, Frank Turk, let us know if you don't want to do that. You know, if you want to continue writing all those forewords, go ahead and give us a call. Assuming you're listening, he doesn't listen anymore.
No, he doesn't. You remember when Turk used to listen when he walked the dog?
Yeah, maybe did his dog like go to live on a farm somewhere?
Maybe there's an incident with his dog because I feel like he used to.
Yeah, what does he listen to when he walks a dog now?
Turk was an avid Saturday morning dog walker. I knew his routine because Saturday AM, man, about 9:30, 10 o'clock, the text would start rolling in as he was live texting or live emailing our program.
I miss that so much.
I miss it too, man. There's a void. You know, you do this business, Zach, you're in this radio business and it's so, it can be so hard. I mean, you lose yourself to, the excess and the decadence and the fame such that sometimes I wake up in my own 1980s apartment with the track lighting and I don't even know who I am anymore. You know what I mean?
And you miss some.
And I miss some. I'm in my track lighting and the crackling fire and the mulled wine and the brie. And all I want is to know that Turk is walking his dog somewhere in middle America listening to my program. And, I don't even have that anymore. You know?
Oh my gosh.
Think about that.
You know what? I think the problem is that, Turk is busy closing like $1 million deals before breakfast and handling this Euro trash.
Literally.
Yeah.
Turk has become literally the real life Harry Ellis. You realize this.
This is what would have happened to Ellis. He would have started a blog. He would have gotten fed up with the blog and
Quit
changed
blog.
His name.
Yeah. But stayed on social media. he would have quit the blog because he was tired of conflict, but then just instigated a bunch of conflict on social media instead.
I don't blog anymore because I don't want all this angst. By the way, let me tweet.
Oh, I love it, man. I tell you what though, if we ever cast a movie of our company and kind of the sphere of our company, Hart Bochner is playing Frank Turk.
Really? I would have assumed that you would have insisted that he would play you.
I would be excited if he played me.
Who would play you in the Gutcheck movie?
I don't know, man, because we have this, so we have this whole thing on the other podcast that I'm a part of where, people were suggesting character casting for Ronnie Martin.
Oh, yes, I'm privy.
Because Ronnie mentioned the name of a show that wasn't really a show and it turned into this whole thing. So I suggested, and I got killed for this, and this will be in Monday's episode of that other program. I suggested that Fred Armisen play Ronnie Martin because I feel like there's some real similarities there. Perfect. In that, Fred, they have similar coloring, similar like skin tones, and Fred has already played like every variety of hipster imaginable on the program Portlandia. So I feel like it was a natural fit, but I got destroyed for it. So
that is hilarious,
I don't know.
Man.
I don't know who plays me, man. Who plays me? You pick me and I'll pick you. How about
that? I think that you would be, let's see here. Maybe, and I don't want you to take this like I'm comparing you to this character, but I don't know the actor's name.
We could talk honestly about this. I'm an adult, a mature individual when it comes to this conversation.
The actor who played Roy on The Office. Remember that guy?
Okay. Yeah.
He got like beefed up and he's been in like some war movies and stuff. And I actually think he's an awesome actor.
Dude,
I freaking love that
role.
Guy.
I could totally live with that. I could totally live with that. For you, I was gonna say Raymond Reddington, man, from The Blacklist. Like Spader.
But he's like 25 years older than me.
Dude, I know, but he's got the cool like fedora thing and the suits and that whole vibe, man. I don't see age. I don't see a number when I think about Spader. Spader is ageless to me. As is Hart Bochner, man. I don't even know. You know what? I didn't want to know how old he is because I don't care.
He's perpetually 19 is what it is.
That's right, man. That's right. Hart Bochner for me will always be doing coke off a desk in the Nakatomi building. And that's how I remember
him. In memoriam. There's a little, he's bronzed there in that chair.
He's bronzed like hunched over the desk. With a little pile of white powder in front.
Can I ask you something before we get to the literacy month real quick?
Yeah.
I'm probably going to take this out because it is going to make me sound like a jerk.
Okay, sure.
In memoriam, I just said, right?
Okay, yeah.
Meaning it's Latin.
Yeah.
In memory.
Yeah.
And I have been thinking.
That's good. That's good teaching.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a scholar. Benefits of a classical
benefits
education.
Benefits of a classical education.
Well, I've been thinking about around town. I keep seeing, this makes me sound like such a jerk, but I keep seeing like stickers on the back of like trucks, like a 2002, like Silverado, or like, you know, just kind of like a, like something like unimpressive. And there'll be like a sticker that'll be like in memory of.
In memoriam. Yeah.
And it'll have like someone who died, like, you know, and tragically it's usually someone young. And my thought is always, what is it that's in memory of this person? Is it like you're saying, cause here's the background. As a minister, we have a memorials fund and we'll like put in like a new, you know, organ, or someone puts in a new wing or something of a church, and you're like, okay, this is now the such and such, you know, pulpit, because it's in memoriam. It's an object that's in memory of the person.
Right.
But if you
just
slap a sticker that costs like 99 cents.
Right.
Is it the sticker itself that's in, that's the memorial? Cause that's really crappy. Is it the car? What is it?
You buy the car in memoriam, probably.
Yeah. Or you retroactively, you're saying it's in memory. This car itself is the memorial.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think what we're doing here is that we're overthinking it. You know what I mean?
I don't think we are. I think that others are underthinking it.
It could be. That could very well be the problem.
I see t-shirts sometimes too that'll have like a picture of someone and say like in memory of it. And I'm like, dude, that t-shirt's super faded and it's got pit stains and it seems like an awful memorial.
You could do better than that.
Right.
You know?
At the same time, then I recognize that I'm a jerk because what they're trying to do is just say, this is my way of remembering this person and not forgetting them. But I still can't entirely shake the question. And it's the same sort of like semi like angst that I get when someone like retweets or like reposts something on Facebook and they're like,
yeah,
this goes out to like Bill Johnson. Ha ha. And I'm like, you're not like an 80s DJ, like, kicking up.
All request and dedication hour, you know?
What do you mean this goes out to? You're just reposting. Right. I don't know. Yeah. It's my issue. It's not them. It's me.
Davey, it's not your issue. And I think you raise like an incredibly valid point here.
All right. We're running out of time here. Let's go ahead and transition to Gut Check Literacy Month, if you would, Mr. Cluck.
Something that we are manifestly about here at Gut Check Press and at the Gut Check Podcast is literacy. This issue of literacy, issues in focus regarding literacy, issues that pertain to our community and what
brought
we have.
Brought to you by James Wiles.
Brought to you by Dr. James Wiles. Get it right. We have, as part of Gut Check Literacy Month, which has been an ongoing project now for about the last year and a half, we read a chapter of our great book, Re-Raptured. If you haven't bought Re-Raptured, it's a rapture satire novel, full-length novel, in the vein of Left Behind, but funnier and better, and funnier because it makes fun of novels like that. So we are ready.
More intentionally funny anyway, right?
More intentionally funny. We are ready for chapter 28, which is called The New Cool.
Will someone please just tell me what's going on here? Alex Roth shouts from the bowels of his lungs. That's a Strong Bad reference, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Duke, Dr. Wiles, and Kate momentarily stop their frantic race down the hall and glance back at the college freshman. You heard the coach, Kate says. It's the end of the world. But how? Duke gives Kate's hand a little tug with his own meaty paw. We don't have time for this, babe. Come on. Taking one more step until someone explains all this, Alex says, trying not to sound whiny. Not here, Duke. Oh, wait, you should be doing Duke.
Not here.
Duke replies firmly.
I have tribulation maps in my office. Let's hustle.
He and Kate continue down the hall and disappear around the corner. His bluff called. Alex feels tears welling up. Don't give up now. Dr. Wiles' long fingers give Alex's shoulder a firm squeeze. I've always felt that you had potential and that I could be the one to help you realize it. I just didn't think it would have anything to do with the rapture. I'm an agnostic, Alex says indignantly.
Of course he is. English student at a university.
You're an agnostic because you're in college and being agnostic is cool. But look around you. Dispensational is the new cool. When you can get up, follow us to Duke's office. You'll see. What do you mean when I can get up? The ponytailed professor knees Alex in the balls and shoves him to the ground. How did you not see that coming? He asks, lightly turning and jogging off down the hall. It's revenge for the time that he got him.
It is. It really is. Emma is climbing, the wind and rain cutting into her already bloodied and swollen face. She usually hates heights, but tonight she's fearless. This whole day has been a complete wash so far, but she can redeem it. She can join her hero at the top of this light stanchion and be raptured by his side. A bolt of lightning cuts through the air not far from Emma. She closes her eyes and continues her ascent.
Father Vincent wants nothing more than to kiss the beautiful girl in front of him, but he can't help but think this is exactly the wrong setting for a first kiss. If you don't remember the setting, it's the state-mandated lactation room in the kilometer-high stadium. He breaks off his steamy gaze from Carol Ann for the first time in 20 minutes and looks around. There is no lactation taking place. All of the women have gone. All of the women, that is, except Carol Ann and a wizened old lady in soaking wet, hideously skimpy clothes, holding a chain gun and spewing a wad of wet skull onto the floor.
Step away from Carol Ann, you perv.
She grits. No, Edith, the girl says with self-righteous indignation. Oh, I'm proud of that. Self-righteous indignation.
Yeah, yeah.
He's my convert, and we're going to find my dad, get his blessing, and we're going to get married. Whoa, 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 whoa. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, Father Vincent says. Convert?
He's not a true believer,
Edith rasps. But he saved my life. Edith lets the chain gun slump to her side and with a flash of steel has a knife at Vincent's throat.
But for what purpose?
She asks. Father Vince is looking into Edith's eyes now and finding the experience to be the very yang to Carol Ann's yin. Or is it the other way around? I don't know what I'm caught up in here, he says. All I know is that my kitchen appliances were talking to me tonight and that I love this woman.
Yeah,
the old woman says.
You're not even a dispensationalist. I can see it in your eyes.
You're right about that, he says. I'm an Episcopal priest. Carol Ann gags audibly and starts spitting repeatedly on the floor.
Look at what you've done, you perv.
Edith scolds.
Time to die.
She draws back the knife, then flops to the floor as 50,000 volts find their way down to the ground and back up to her extremities. I can't believe I just tased an old woman, Father Vincent says aloud to himself. Carol Ann scoops up the 40-pound gun, an ample loop of ammunition hanging from its side. We've got to find my father, she says. Someone's out to get him, but I don't know who. Father Vince gives an exaggerated shrug. Do you have anything to go on? He asks. Just this. I found it in Dad's pocket before the midget brought him back to life and we jumped out of a helicopter. Uh-huh. He takes the paper from her hand and immediately sees the signature. Van Shrimpy. He can't breathe for a second.
My story is, in many ways, the opposite of yours, Sylvia says. My father was deputy director of the CIA and a solid dispensationalist. When I was a little girl, he took me aside and told me that... ka-chung! The three of them freeze and look at the door, which shakes as another ka-chung reverberates through the room. Get behind me, Sylvia barks, leveling her pistol at the door. There is a beep and then a buzz click and it swings open, revealing Max Darby holding a grenade launcher. I know where Van Shrimpy is, he says, and I know how to knock him off his pedestal. Sylvia grins. Time to end this.
Nice.
And that is the end of our chapter, Zach, and it's time to end this program. This has been, this as an episode, I think, and I just want to do a little analysis of the up on the air before we sign off.
A little chalk talk, yeah.
A little chalk talk, you know, as radio professionals, we always go back and we watch the tapes, we listen to the film, and we analyze. I feel like this ep was every bit as strong as last week's ep was weak. Your
last
thoughts.
One didn't suck as bad as I thought it did.
It didn't either. Yeah, I listened to it. And I rarely listen to, well, I always listen to our shows. Let me just say that. But yeah, I don't feel like it sucked as badly as we thought it did.
But this one was better. This was great. And I want us to kind of just pat each other on the back a second as we sign off.
I agree.
And say, well done, Ted.
Yeah, Zach, well done to you too. And you know, it's important as a company that we celebrate our successes together. And, and let this be one of those moments where you and I both go home, we take the lunch pail, man, we leave the studio, we clock out, we punch the time card, and we go back and we feel good about a good day's work. We feel good about what we did here today in the studio.
Amen to that.
Amen to that, Zach, and amen to another episode of the Gut Check Podcast in the can, as it were. And we will see you next time. And dude, just to be clear, I just want to make sure you're right now. I'm not at this moment compulsively. That's not a thing that I feel.
Cut.